I recently just did a survey in the customer marketing community, and I asked people, how would you rate the health of your database? And 80% of them said it was okay, poor, or very poor.
Welcome to the OpStars podcast, where we talk to revenue operations pros at the top of their game so that we can collectively support each other through the sharing of ideas, learning best practices, and discovering innovative new strategies. I'm your host, Don Offos.
So thanks for joining us. We're doing another episode of the OpStars podcast. Today I have Erwin Hipsman. Erwin is most recently the customer marketing director at Forrester. He's now the founder of the Advocacy Maven Coalition, and really excited to have him on the podcast today. Erwin, how are you doing?
Doing great here in Boston. Springtime's right around the corner.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, the weather's been really good. I'm in the Bay Area. The weather's been amazing. So it's been great to have like decent weather and not rain. So first thing I wanted to hit off with was like, you know, with your experience in customer marketing and advocacy, how do you approach the foundational health of a customer database? And what are the like the first steps that you take to really ensure that it's clean and accurate?
I've started up 4 customer marketing practices over the past few years. And the one thing they all had in common was when I walked in, the health of the customer contact database was weak at best. And I recently just did a survey in the customer marketing community. And I asked people, you know, how would you rate the health of your database? And 80% of them said it was okay, poor, or very poor. 20% said it was good, and 0% said it was excellent. And I think if you talk to any sort of customer marketing person out there, they would say, yeah, the health of our database could be better. From a foundational perspective, I think there are 3 pieces to that database that are sort of the, you know, the low-hanging fruit or the more easily accomplished. There's integrating with your platform. That's a lot trickier because it's a lot more moving parts. But on your own, as a sort of customer marketing person, you can work on 3 things. One is the geography of the person. That impacts, you know, GDPR, Canada, Germany regulations, state regulations, California. There's 7 or 8 states that now have their own email privacy regulations. And also in-person events. You don't want to invite somebody to event Boston and they live in London because you assume that they're located where the company's headquartered. So there's the geography is the first one, cleaning that up. Second is the title. Because oftentimes when somebody first started a relationship with your company, that's when the information got entered into the CRM system. And we assume that's their title forever and ever, unless somebody goes in there and changes it. And that's pretty unlikely that anybody's going to update the titles because that's not a key KPI. But you really do need to know from a customer marketing, customer communication perspective, segmentation, does somebody have a new title? And the third is, are they still even at the company? So, you know, you assume if they're in the database that they're still there, they could have gone 3 years ago on 3 different companies and you still think of them as a customer. So those are the 3 sort of easier things to accomplish. That's really the foundational elements. And, you know, it can be done manually if you tier your client database. You say, okay, here's the top 10%. We need to manually, once a year, once a quarter, whatever it is, go into LinkedIn and just check and make sure they're right. Then there's your second tier that maybe only once a year do you clean up, manually. And then there's the third tier that you just don't worry about. There are obviously technology solutions out there that will do that for you, but that means procurement, bringing in product, expense, et cetera. So I've primarily done the manual side. I've gone to a place like Upwork and say, here's 1,000 names. Can you go through them in LinkedIn for me? But towards the end of my time at Forrester, we were looking very carefully at how to solve this with technology solutions. There are companies out there that will do that cleanup for you.
Yeah, because the one thing I think about, if you think about going back in time, pre-pandemic, I can remember, it was really easy to track where people were located because everyone was in the office. So if you have a headquarters location, that's where everyone's at. But like after the pandemic, they can work from anywhere. A lot of companies are remote first. So if you're doing these in-person events, you can't rely on headquarter address being the place where that person's located. So with all those changes that came with the pandemic, how have you adjusted strategies for maintaining accurate segmented customer data for in-person invites now that the pandemic's over?
The way we did it was, going back to that tiering, you've got 20,000, 30,000 names, there's some clear differentiation between your key contacts, and we'd love to talk about that when we talk about crisis communications. Those really need to be at the 99% accuracy The good news is you have 1,000 customers, there's probably 1 to 2 key contacts at those accounts. So, you know, manually you can keep track of those people during the season. So let's say the fall is your big season for in-person events. So over the summer, it's a time to literally go in there and clean it up. I mean, you can ask people where they're located, but, you know, you're not going to get a lot of response from that. And you just have to do it the hard way or use some technology. And then there's that second tier.
I would say like
that maybe whatever's in the database, you go with it and you're not worried about cleaning them up. In the third tier, they're not going to come to your event anyway. So let's not worry about it. If you had technology, then you could clean up all three of those tiers at once.
Yeah, I was going to say like that's where I've seen it, right? Like I think a lot of the data enrichment companies that are out there now, they're making it a point to find out where these people are located physically, not necessarily tied to the headquarters. And then their whole mantra is ongoing enrichment. So like if people do move or they do change titles or they do change jobs, the whole buying premise of these companies that have this technology that do this is that we're going to take care of all that for you. You just need to set us up to be able to enrich your database in a way that executes on all that.
Yeah, and those tools didn't exist 2 or 3 years ago. They're relatively new. And, you know, some companies out there are User Gems, Boomerang, Champify. There's probably going to be more of them coming out that both do a combination of scraping LinkedIn, but also other sources. You can't rely exclusively on LinkedIn. But what's nice about it is that it's pretty quick. So, you know, if you do a monthly enrichment with one of these services and somebody changes their location, within 30 days, you've got an update. You don't have to wait till, okay, once a year, we do a manual cleanup.
Yeah, I mean, I would think even if you don't want to rely on technology to do this and you do, and you don't have the budget to do it, you need to set something up manually, you could even set up a process to say, if we send an email to someone that we think is a prospect or a customer and it bounces, I want to flag it and then send it into a flat file that I'm going to send off to Upwork once every other week to have it be looked at to say, hey, is this person still at the company? Did they change titles? Did they change locations? And you can just do your own kind of manual, you know, setting it up manually. If you don't have the budget to buy these tools, you could set it up to be able to do it without even really having to buy any technology to do it.
Yeah, well, what I found is sort of manually, you could probably figure out about 60% of the people. Because, you know, not everyone bounces back. You get false positives and all that. So you can get about 60% of the people, but you can track that way. There'll be a group of people that it's just really hard to do that manually. You know, clearly someone has a name, Jack Smith, and, you know, it's a common name. That gets really tricky because, you know, like, Richard that work at Oracle's, you know, is the one who's left.
Yeah, and the other thing I find with Upwork, too, is you really have to find the right person that understands what you're trying to accomplish. And then you want to use that person consistently so that when you have ongoing work for them to do, you know, they already understand what your methodology is and why you're doing it. You don't have to like retrain somebody every time you're sending somebody a file on Upwork.
The nice thing though of the technology is that, you know, they'll integrate into Salesforce and they'll start a nurture campaign for you. But, you know, that's an expense and that's procurement and there's PII issues and all that.
Could you also share some of the insights on how you've successfully integrated customer marketing systems with existing CRM and data management platforms to enhance revenue generation? I know you talked about tracking your champions using something like a Champify or User Gems. I know that's kind of nascent technology. Are there other things that you've seen that work?
Well, the last project I worked on before I was laid off from Forrester was a, you know, program to generate repeat business from former customers. What we did there was we identified people who had left their company, and that was through either bounce backs or, you know, manually. A customer success manager would fill out a form saying, hey, I heard this person has just left, or an account manager would, you know, figure out this person has just left. Then, you know, we did this manually. We didn't integrate into Salesforce, and that was going to be the next phase. If I was still there, we were going to tie it all into Salesforce and automate it. And then what we were able to do is, you know, we went into LinkedIn. We looked at the status and there were basically 3 different things that would happen. Person would either have left and not landed anywhere yet. They left and landed at an ideal customer profile, or they left and landed at a non-ideal customer profile. And where we got to was the lead got handed off to the BDR team. So it was like any other lead, except it was a very warm lead. And then they decided if they want to accept the lead. So if the person hadn't landed yet, I wouldn't send that lead over because there's not really a lead yet until they land. I would suggest that you may want to nurture those people in a different way, even though they haven't landed. But those people who landed, the lead got handed over to the BDR team. They accepted it if the person was in their ICP, rejected it if not. And what was amazing, I told people, like, we got to wait about 6 months for the first deal to come through. Within 60 days, we closed 3 deals, you know, over six figures from people that we identify as having left the company and reached out to them. Now, those people, frankly, would have probably become a customer, but it probably would have taken them 6 months to have called us up and saying, hey, I'm ready to buy. And that's the process that most companies use today for any of those, you know, alumni type people is, well, let's just wait till they call us up and then we'll be happy to sell to them. Because that means the sales cycle will be very quick because they've called us up. On the other hand, you're waiting 6 to 9 months for a lot of them to call you up. So the key to these programs is to, you know, accelerate the new purchase.
And you've set this up. I mean, you've done this more than once. I mean, it wasn't just Forrester where you did this. Generally speaking, like, how do you track and engage those customers that are advocates but have left the companies and gone somewhere else? Do you silo them within your marketing platform? Or, like, what's the next step when they do move to a new company? Or even if they retire or they fall outside your ICP? I mean, are there different marketing nurture tracks that you put them on depending on what category they fall in?
Yeah, the advocates are sort of a different animal. In that, you know, what I've been talking about alumni now is, you know, anybody who was a user of your product and have left their company and have gone somewhere else.
Okay.
Advocates have a very, you know, obviously they're a very different persona. I've sort of been on the other side of it. I've been an advocate for other companies. And what's interesting is I've seen two different flavors. Flavor one is, oh, I've left my company. And it's like, oh, that guy's useless to me. So just drop me. I'll drop in the relationship. We're breaking up because you're not in your company. You can't, you know, you can't put your company name behind it. And I've seen some smarter companies saying, well, let's continue to hold on to you as an advocate. So, you know, we have our annual conference, you know, we'll give you a free ticket to it. You still have access to the community, whatever it happens to be. So that, you know, when that person does land, or they may not be able to be an advocate like they were at the old company, because the new company doesn't let them be public. But, you know, keep that person in your stable, hold on to them as a sort of a dormant advocate. But, you know, the problem is, you know, so focused on the day-to-day and, you know, leveraging current advocates for as much as they can, that sort of those people who've left sort of get tossed to the side. And I think it's a missed opportunity. It's a different sort of alumni. It's even it's a hot alumni as opposed to a warm alumni. That person actually advocated for you. So some of those same lessons learned with any alumni should be transferred over to advocates as well.
Got it. It's really worth tracking these people, even if they do go somewhere and fall outside your ICP, because they might leave that company and then fall back into your ICP. So it's still worth tracking those people.
Or you can still leverage them for things. It's like, you know, you need a reference call. Oh, here's the perfect person. A lot of what customer marketing does, or customer advocacy, and I want to talk a little bit about the difference, is, you know, it's finding those referrals. So just because someone left, that doesn't mean they can't be a referral if it's the right fit. You know, if I was a prospect, then, you know, I had two options: somebody who was the perfect fit but wasn't still at their company, and somebody who wasn't the greatest fit but still at their company. I said, give me the perfect fit.
So a customer advocate is going to be someone that has used your product and loves it and was willing to speak on your behalf and be reference calls. Where customer marketing is more of the broad marketing.
Well, the way it's evolved, I mean, you know, you think about it, you know, customer experience is three legs to this whole customer world. There's customer experience, which is sort of the most mature discipline, probably been around 20, 30 years. You can get a degree at a university in customer experience. Then there's customer success, which is, you know, instituted, you know, mainly by Salesforce. They sort of made it happen. Well, about 15 years old, pretty established with its pros and cons around scaling issues, et cetera. And then there's customer advocacy, which is much more recent. And the way that evolved is that customer success managers were each, they were running their own user groups. They were each putting out their own newsletter. And at some point, somebody in the organization said, your job in customer success is one-to-one, not the one-to-many. Let's bring on somebody who can manage the one-to-many type of communications and relationships, et cetera. So that was primarily advocacy. That's references, reviews, testimonials, case studies, swag. Getting people to speak at your events.
Yep.
What's your classic advocacy? And that's about 80% of that customer marketing world fit into that customer advocacy bucket. There's about 20% of us that I would call, demand gen customer marketing. So people like me think about, you know, segmentation, taking advantage of the customer database, generating repeat business from customers, cross-sell, those sort of activities. And it's that one-to-many open rates, things like that, that we really think about. And getting a newsletter out the door, so you don't have to have, you know, 10 newsletters, you have one newsletter for the company. You know, that's your classic customer marketing. But what happens in this world is that everything is called customer marketing. And so it gets very confusing within the organization. Well, are you an advocate person? And then lo and behold, you know, somebody like me comes around who wants to talk about databases. I want to talk to RevOps and marketing ops. Like, no, you're the advocacy guy. You know, your job is to do references. Like, no, no, no. My job is to be with customers effectively, generate revenue, not just, you know, not just generate testimonials. And it has become a struggle at some organizations I've been at to talk about those sort of revenue opportunities and, you know, communicate with customers. There was one company I was at, Crimson Hexagon, they're not around anymore, so I can say it. You know, whenever we wanted to get a one-to-many communication out to customers, like, no, we're busy, maybe next month we'll get something out for you, maybe next month. And at one point, we bought our own email marketing system. We didn't tell anybody. And it took a year for the demand gen side of the house to figure out that we were sending out our own emails on our own, with the downside of, you know, opt-outs and all that. But we just couldn't get anything out the door, so we just did it ourselves. And it just showed that it took a year for them to figure out that we were actually communicating with customers. I feel that marketing, I'm going to be bold here and make a statement. I feel that marketing probably doesn't really understand post-sales. So they've been trained around branding and messaging, demand gen, pre-sales, muscle memories around that. Here's a great example. You know, every company I've gone to, you know, when we want to send out a message to customers about an upcoming event, let's say, well, let's just send them the same message that we sent to prospects. Like, well, no, customers are different than prospects. You need to talk to them differently. Well, we'll just change like the opening sentence. You've been a customer for a long time. Why don't you come to the event? No, you got to go a little bit deeper than that when you're talking to customers. I don't know if marketing is really the best place for post sales. And my latest area, some of it's from listening to particularly, you know, this podcast and the one that you did with Laura Wheeler a few weeks ago. The question I had is like, maybe customer marketing's best friend is RevOps as opposed to marketing ops. And it's something I'm going to start exploring. And I would love to talk to other companies that RevOps has gone to customer marketing and say, look, you're in customer marketing. We think of customers as accounts. You think of them as contacts. There's got to be an overlap there somewhere. And I think that's, to me, the next conversation is with RevOps and customer marketing.
I mean, because really what you want to do is you want to be able to create a customer advocacy program that really contributes to pipeline. So that you're bringing those upsell opportunities, you're adding to net retention. If you're able to craft it in that way, you probably are going to get a lot more attention from the sales side. And I think it changes the game and it makes it a much more, you're able to nuance your messaging in a way where it's going to resonate with customers and you'll have more success with it.
Yeah, something I've wanted to do and haven't is work with the, you know, advocacy side of the house, because generally, it's the same people over and over again. You find, you know, find your handful of people. Like, what ways can we use the database, use our relationship with RevOps, use relationship with a lot of people, with other people across the organization to begin to identify who are those potential customer advocates that you may want to consider? That was something we dipped our toes into a little bit at Forrester was, you know, what is that profile of the advocate? How do we create an advocate qualifying, you know, funnel? You know, so here are 50 people we think could be advocates. Now, maybe only five of them would be, but they're probably five that you would never figure out on your own.
That's true. So have you run into any situations when trying to get advocates where it was the result of something that had started out as a crisis, let's say, right? Where the company was able to maybe turn somebody around into an advocate as a result of something that occurred. Have you ever run into that at all?
Well, there's two types of crises, I think. Well, one is at the account level crisis. So something happened, their customer success manager just left and nobody told them. And the meeting, you know, and they showed up for the meeting and, oh yeah, your CSM left, you know, 2 months ago. And why didn't anyone tell me? You know, certainly, you know, I've heard of opportunities where you can, you know, turn that situation around. The crisis that I'm much, much more concerned about is the more, you know, what keeps me awake at night and should keep a lot of people awake at night is when, you know, the CEO 9 o'clock in the morning says, we wrote an email last night. We have a major crisis. We need to communicate with our key contacts at every account. Erwin, can we get it out by 4 o'clock? Well, not exactly, because we don't really keep track of people by key contacts. I can send a note to anyone signing the contract. Well, that's half of that's going to go to someone in procurement, or I have to ask the CSMs who the key contacts are, because they've kept that information close at their chest. They didn't want us to know who those key contacts were. So no, I really can't get that out. We have to send it to everybody. And the CEO goes, I don't want to send this to everybody. I want to send to that one or two people or people at each account. Because I'm telling them, if you have any questions, call me up. Because I'm trying to turn this around to a, you know, to a potential moment of advocacy. And, you know, not being able to quickly figure out who are those key people at your accounts that you need to contact is a big problem. When I was at, again, Crimson Hexagon, we had a front page Wall Street Journal article calling us next Cambridge Analytica. And we literally had to call up every one of our customers. Now, we had that concept of main point of contact at each account that had to be updated at least once a quarter, just looked at. And so we were able to very quickly, within a week, talk to hundreds and hundreds of customers. I mean, I was doing 10 meetings a day, explaining to them what was the situation, what we're doing to, you know, solve it, where it's at, how we're going to update them, et cetera, et cetera. But not being able to communicate with your key contacts is a real problem that a lot of organizations have.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's almost like a step one, right? Is just taking the time to work with your CX team to figure out who those people are. So the event you do have a problem, you are able to reach out to them quickly.
Right. And that's how you potentially have an advocate. It's like, wow, they were proactive. They got to me quickly.
Yep.
And whatever's going to happen after that. But without that, you're just grasping at straws and just sending, okay, let's send it to anybody with a C-level title. Well, half those people don't even know who you are. And you're sending them a crisis communication note.
That's true. So are there any real like emerging trends in customer marketing and advocacy that you're excited about? And how are you looking to incorporate those into your strategies?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing I'm excited about is this, you know, there's a lot of talk about customer lifecycle marketing. Who owns that customer lifecycle? Starting with pre-sales into onboarding, utilization, generating value, and hopefully turning them around into advocates. Where I'm zeroing in on is what happens to that person when they've left your organization? How do you integrate them into a post-account or post-customer life cycle? What do you do with those people who've left? Because they know you well, and just because they've left, you know, the expression I use is, you know, just because that person's left the company doesn't mean the relationship needs that. And what are those forms of relationships that, you know, can be continued? So it's a post-sales lifecycle marketing. It doesn't end when that person leaves. To go back a little bit deeper to the customer marketing, customer advocacy world, what's really sad is a year ago, maybe 18 months ago, LinkedIn put out a survey that the number two or number three highest increase in job openings was for customer marketing. About 18 months ago, customer marketing was like off the charts. You could literally get a job in weeks. And with the downturn in the economy is that all those people have, you know, a lot of people have been let go. So myself included, I was let go at Forrester because it was part of a larger riff, and let's move some of those things onto other people. And so customer marketing has seen a real impact on layoffs. And I think part of that is doing it. I think the recognition that is happening in this customer marketing world is that you just can't be the advocacy guy or gal. It's more than just the references and reviews and testimonials. You know, you've got to somehow or other impact revenue. And I think that's the challenge that customer marketing people, you know, because each organization is different, you know, how can you generate, you know, value? At Forrester, you know, people would, as part of their license, they would get a ticket to one of the events, you know, and those tickets are event, let's say it's worth $3,000. If the person didn't use their ticket, the revenue wasn't recognized. Now, the sale was made and the money came in, you don't refund, but the revenue wasn't sort of accounting-wise recognized. And so from a customer marketing perspective, I saw that was a big gap. And we worked out, you know, programs to remind people that, hey, if you don't use this ticket, you lose it. You can't use it again next year because that's the way it got purchased. And why use it? Or you can give it to somebody on your team to use. It doesn't have to be you. And we will have to generate a few $1 million in recognizable revenue as a result of going to clients and saying, use what you already bought. Now, that may not be true at every company because not everyone sells event tickets. But look within your organization, get out of that silo, talk to other people and figure out what can I do to help on the revenue recognition perspective, or at least attribution perspective, because it's, you know, it's easy, you know, company has 20 case studies. All right. We don't need any case studies right now. We got enough. We'll just let that customer marketing person go. So, you know, zero in on the revenue side of the house. And that's where the whole repeat business former customers comes in.
Yeah. I mean, and that's where I think we were talking about earlier is how you align it to upsells. And then the other thing that I think too is a big deal right now is net retention. And it's not necessarily net retention of the customer, right? There's a difference in retention between I've kept the customer, but they're paying us less money, and the net retention of I kept the customer and they at least stayed the same amount of money, or they did have an upsell, right? I think there's different paths there. Like, I think if you can align customer marketing to identifiable net retention events and upsell events, you start really demonstrating the value of what a customer marketing team can bring an organization, and it kind of changes the perspective of like where that fits and how important it is.
Yeah, I totally agree. One area that customer marketing is, and I think marketing in general, has not done well is on the cross-sell side. For sure, you know, people will often say cross-sell, upsell, as if they're like the same motion. And when somebody talks about cross-sell, upsell, like they're the same motion, they don't get it. They don't understand how they're very different. And an area that customer marketing has, and maybe there's no role, I don't know, has not quite figured out. I think customer marketing has figured out, or can figure out easily, how to participate in upsell. The cross-sell is, you know, is a very different motion. And the companies I've worked at, you know, I've personally struggled, and I think the organization has struggled, at how to use your customer contact database to help with cross-sell. You know, the simple thing is, well, why can't they just give us a reference? Well, that's not your customer's job, is not to sell for you and give you in, just make introductions to us. I've never seen that work. And because of that, you know, that's sort of the obvious one is, you know, let's, you know, we know how to get references. So let's have that person give us a reference to their colleague in another division. I've never seen it work. And I have seen many organizations struggle with cross-sell in general, and customer marketing in particular, because you would think of customer marketing should be able to sort of crack the code of cross-sell, but I haven't seen it.
I think about that when you were describing that, I can think of situations where you're at a company and it's like, yay, look at this huge enterprise customer is a customer, right? Like say a Cisco, right? Sure. Cisco's a great example. How many divisions does Cisco have? And it's like, oh, you want to plant your flag that you know, Cisco is a customer, but they're only using you in one sliver of their organization. And maybe you have a rabid fan, but like, how do you get into those other parts of Cisco? There has to be a strategy of doing that. If you have somebody who is an advocate for you within the company, that's your best person to work with. Ask them, you know, how do I navigate getting into other parts of the organization? You know, not necessarily just introductions, but just tell me what's the lay of the land, you know, and they can help you map that out.
If you were going to a CEO of a company, say, let's use Cisco as an example. I have an advocate at Cisco. I can use them one of two ways. I can use them for external advocacy, like they'll speak at our big event, or I can use them for internal advocacy. The CEO would say, oh, I want them to speak at our event because we want a Fortune 500 company to stand up in front of everybody. I would argue that person is more valuable to us if I can use them as an internal advocate. First of all, they don't need permission to be an internal advocate, whereas to be an external advocate, they need permission. So it'll be harder to get them to do that. But from a revenue perspective, that person will generate more revenue if they're willing to do the internal advocacy. It's the exact same motion. It's the same advocate, you know, a video, a testimonial, et cetera. But you tell that person, you're speaking to your colleagues at Cisco. So you can speak to them in a different way than if you're just speaking to generic prospects. So I've always felt that those advocates at the enterprise are more valuable if they get used internally. And it's counterintuitive, but I'm convinced.
Do you think that the largest obstacle to customer marketing success, the success for customer marketing, is that recognition of the value that they're bringing the organization? Or what is the largest obstacle for getting a customer marketing program to be successful?
Yeah, I think what's happened, particularly in the past year and a half, with customer marketing sort of taking the brunt of layoffs, is when they do start it up again. I've seen this, I've talked to people looking for work. What used to be like a director role is now a manager role. What used to be a manager role is now a specialist role. And, you know, somebody who's a manager or a specialist just doesn't have the political clout to go around the organization and talk about the value of customer marketing. So I think when organizations start customer marketing, they really need to get somebody who's been around, you know, who's sort of director level, you know, senior director level, as opposed to a junior person. The other option is to bring somebody in internally who doesn't know anything about customer marketing and sort of train them along, depending on the person. You know, that can be a good strategy. But what's happened is that customer marketing has gone pigeonholed into references and reviews. And earlier I talked about that 80% of the people in customer marketing are more that sort of classic advocacy person, 20% or more that demand gen customer marketing person. And so what I've been telling, my colleagues in customer, the advocacy side is at least understand and meet with the demand gen people so you know their language and you can sort of begin to figure out, okay, here's how I can help. So, talk to RevOps, talk to marketing ops, talk to demand gen, start developing a relationship with those people across the company, not to have for anything specific, but just to begin to map out a year from now, here's a program that I think we can launch working in tandem with whoever that would be revenue generating. And I might be the catalyst for it to make it happen. And once it gets up and running, like the repeat business program, I saw my role as a catalyst. Let's get it up and running because I've got this, as customer marketing, you do have a unique view of the company. And then once it gets going, I can stand back and it can run on its own. And I think a lot of times we tend to want to build empires. It's like build a program and let it go where it needs to go. And then you go on to the next program. The problem is that if there's no next program, then, your job security is somewhat limited.
So to kind of wrap up, I know we've talked at the individual level, if you're someone's oriented in a customer marketing role, things they can do to drive that. What if, we have somebody listening today that they're at an account and they don't even have anything like what we're talking about? So they don't really have customer marketing. They don't have an advocacy program. What advice would you give a business that's looking to build something like that after you're hearing the podcast today?
I would say two things. One is to find companies like you and just see what they've done. There's a lot of folks in that customer marketing world, to talk to just to understand how they started up. And then sort of, I was listening to the Laura Wheeler conversation from Renegade Operations, the podcast. It was a fantastic, if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to that one. It was a really fantastic one. But, my path is sort of similar to hers in that I've decided to not, work full-time at a company and, setting up a consultancy. And I focus on data health and these alumni repeat business programs. And I would suggest somebody who's thinking about getting into this world, one is to, before they even start, is to look at their database and just see what is the shape of our database. Because to hire somebody and then say, you've got to run customer advocacy and the database is just not there, it's going to be 6 months till you see any value from that person. So do some of the foundational work before you bring somebody on. And I would suggest to hire
some of that foundational things are some of the things that really RevOps. I always feel that like the health of your database is RevOps is that's a RevOps function. If you feel that you want to start a customer marketing advocacy program and your database is not in a good state, you should really engage with your RevOps team or your MarkOps team to make sure that that gets fixed first. To your point,
yeah. And then the other thing is that Ben, a lot of companies struggle with, there's a conversation with customer marketing communities, where should this live? Should it live in sales and marketing with customer success, whatever? So I think there needs to be I went to work at one company. They literally hired two customer marketing people at the exact same time because two sides of the house were fighting and they couldn't agree where it should live. So each got their own customer marketing person. And then we showed up first day, looked at each other and go, well, what do we do? Because we both got hired to do the same job. So I think another piece of it is figure out where it's going to live within the organization. I've seen it live in product marketing. I've seen it live with customer success, with demand gen. There's no right or wrong, but let's just come to an agreement as to where it's going to live so that everyone knows where it is.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, Erwin, is there anything you'd like to leave us with?
No, just, one of the things, channeling Laura, who I'm actually going to be meeting with this week. I'm so excited. Anybody can reach out to me and I'll do a free database health assessment. I've got 30 questions I ask. I don't need to see your customer database. I don't need any PII. I don't need any contracts. But in 30 minutes, I can give you a benchmark score and tell you what the health of your customer database is. So just connect with me on LinkedIn.
There you go. All right, Erwin, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate you having you on the podcast.
Yeah, this is, I really enjoyed this podcast in particular and I'm a big fan of the work you do.
Awesome.
The OpStars podcast is brought to you by Lean Data. To find out more about us and our suite of Salesforce native products for marketing, sales, and revenue operations, head to leandata.com and then make sure to search for OpStars in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else that podcasts are found. Make sure to click subscribe so you don't miss on any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at OpStars and Lean Data, thanks for listening.